So, as I said, this is Path to Senior Sysadmin. It's career advice. First thing, I promise this will not be death by PowerPoint. There will not be many words up there. And Amy said the slides will be available. The slides I'm going to make available are my speaking notes, not what you're seeing here. So don't think, I don't want to see this on the web. Don't worry. There'll be better stuff later. The purpose of the talk, a bunch of suggestions for personal growth, professional growth, career advice. They are suggestions. They are strong suggestions in some cases, but they are suggestions as much because not everything I say is going to apply to every person in every job. So take it with however much salt is appropriate. A little bit about what kind of senior I mean, what we're talking about, some time on hard technical skills, squishy technical skills, which I'll explain in a bit, and soft skills. I'm going to spend only a quarter of the talk talking about the hard skills because the squishy skills and the soft stuff is what's harder. And there will definitely be time for questions at the end. So what do I mean by senior? That's one style. I got that in the mail this summer. I think probably we're talking more about that. Yes, those are real sysadmins. It used to be there was only one kind of sysadmin, right? Every sysadmin did everything. We did networking, we did printers, we did backups, we did the whole setup. These days we're splitting into, there are a bunch of generalists, typically people who work one or two sysadmins in a smaller shop and are responsible for everything, and larger shops that tend to have specialists. There are email sysadmins, there are storage sysadmins, networking sysadmins, et cetera. And it is possible these days, I believe, to get to a spot where you are legitimately considered a very senior sysadmin and all you really know is storage. I mean, you understand the other stuff, but you don't know how to do it. You may not actually do a lot of programming. In big sites and or places where there's lots of specialization needed, the old idea of everybody can do everything may not apply. There are different skills. Some of them are going to be the same, and the soft skills and some of the squishy skills are going to apply across all of this, generalist, specialist, and regardless of what kind of specialist. The hard skills that I'm talking about are primarily for generalists because that's still the bulk of our audience. But I may say, you've got to learn the kernel. And if you're a networking person, well, maybe you don't need to learn the kernel. I'm going to talk about stuff. Some of it applies to everybody. None of it applies to everyone. I'm aiming this talk at people who are currently mid-level sysadmins trying to go to senior. Although, if you consider yourself a junior sysadmin, think of this as long-range planning. Stuff that maybe you can start on now, maybe you need to start on down the road, but it's a suggested idea. Also, I'm mostly going to talk about Unix in whatever form, Unix, Linux, Starnix, FreeBSD. It's what I know. The talk, most of what I'm going to tell you applies to whatever your favorite flavor of OS is. It's just, I don't want to stop every time and say, so if you're a Linux guy, you need to know this, and if you're a Windows person, you need to know this, and if you're mainframe, blah. I'm going to give the Unix examples. It's not because I mean anything against the other OSs. It's just, it's shorthand, and it's what I know. However, on that point, there is some benefit to knowing multiple platforms. So in particular, if you knew some version of Linux and Windows, that's a real big win for employers, right? They see you can do different stuff. Alternately, some flavor of Linux plus Solaris, let's say. When I say multiple platforms, I don't mean Debian and Red Hat. But again, all the stuff I'm going to talk about is going to be not specific to any distro, any OS. These are general concepts. And again, just to repeat, these are suggestions. There is nothing here that says you must do this for every position. The Sage Short Topics booklet, Job Descriptions, which was the first, the 7th or 8th, and now the 22nd. This is the third revision. I believe it's available today, or maybe even yesterday. And it covers some of the same stuff that I'm talking about here. It doesn't cover as many of the soft skills, but it's another reference. You might consider picking it up or not. One other thing is I'm going to tell you a bunch of stuff that you need to do. I'm going to tell you, in effect, questions you need to be asking. What should I be doing? Where should I be going? I'm not giving you answers. In some cases, just knowing the skills you need to learn is the most important part. That's enough to get you going. In other cases, there's nowhere near enough time to tell you how to learn these things in particular. So this is the checklist of what you need to do. And in fact, one of the skills I'll talk about is how to learn things. So again, these are questions, not answers. Starting with hard technical skills. This is the obvious stuff: backups, email, networking. Very high level overview. I'm not going to be talking about any one thing in particular. I'm not going to be talking about specific skills there. But there is a sort of minimum level of stuff that you need to know before you can get on to some of the harder stuff. And I'll give usually some of the reasons why you need this stuff, but again, most of this is going to be obvious. This is also the easy stuff. This is the stuff that some of you probably already know, and if you don't know it, you're not going to have a lot of trouble learning it. It's just a matter of time. First bit is you really need to know what you're working with. So in the Unix world, you need to know everything which is in section one of the manual, right? CP, MV, RM, all those things. And all the stuff in section seven, the sysadmin stuff. These days, I can't ever remember what falls into 7 and what falls into 1, or if even people make that distinction anymore. But you need to know all the commands on the system just because it's what you're working with, right? You know, you need to know how to get through the system. It's really like the minimum entry point. Now, there are an awful lot of commands out there. And for example, one of the things I've seen is on the IRC channel, somebody who asked some sort of programming problem going, well, I've got this weird thing and I sort of need to do this and blah, and they're thinking it's going to be a complicated question. And somebody says, oh, there's this cool command called com, which will do exactly what you want. It's like, oh, well, why didn't I think of that? Take your time and just walk through the manual someday. Try every command, learn every command, know what they are. Join, unique, expr, again, those are commands that a lot of people don't know about or don't use. They're worth learning. If you're trying to drive a system, trying to control it, if you don't know all the options to it, you can't run it as well as somebody else. Now, mind you, I'm not saying memorize them all. Simply saying become familiar with them, have seen them once or twice. You need to understand the boot process. Pick your favorite operating system and understand everything from when you turn the power on to when you get a login prompt in whatever form the login prompt is. Included in that is run levels, what services are turned on and off at different run levels, or even if your system has run levels anymore, the function of etc init tab or whatever Mac calls it or whatever it is, all the stuff in etc init.d or the replacements for things like Solaris SMF or launchd or whatever it is, you need to understand how stuff boots, how it gets started, because that really is, you know, why didn't such and such start? Well, where do you look? There, the boot process. Backups, RAID and volume management, NIS, LDAP, Active Directory, whatever flavor of authentication authorization you need, PAM probably, two-factor or three-factor authentication, all those kinds of things, you need to have a pretty good working understanding of them. It would probably be good to have a solid grounding in any one implementation of any of those. So for backups, I really don't care if it's Legato or Amanda or whatever it is, but just you should know one of them. Once you learn one of them, you can learn the rest of them. You can move from place to place, figure them out as you go. But if you've never used a backup system, it's going to be hard the first time. Senior people ought to be able to look at these things fairly quick and go, well, I've never used Amanda, but I've used Veritas or Legato. Yeah, you know, we'll figure it out somehow. You need to know some programming skills. At a minimum, there's a bunch of automation type stuff that doesn't even begin to approach system configuration. We're talking about, you know, I've got to make this change to, you know, 47 people's .bashrc file. And you really don't want to go typing it over and over and over again. Real simple automation. Also, there's a bunch of stuff that if you have developers at your company, they're probably not going to write for you. Either they don't understand the low-level system stuff that you need done, or it's just too simple a script for them to bother with, but it's too complicated for you to do by hand. What language? Well, I suggest that you start with shell and awk and sed, because those are the things you guarantee are A, on every system, and B, are probably pretty similar across every machine that's there. You know it's there, you can get it up and working, and when your Perl, Python, Ruby installation isn't installing because of some problem you're having, you can use those three tools to fix that one, get it up and going. You need to be comfortable with programming in some language that you can do bigger, fancier stuff. I'm recommending Perl, and I'm recommending Perl at the level of you ought to be able to write a Perl program with multiple subroutines, with using external modules, with proper error checking, with some reasonable amount of regex foo. There are people that say, well, why not Python or why not Ruby? I think that Perl is still really the lingua franca of sysadmin. Maybe it's changing, but for now, I think it really is the one that everybody knows. Now, obviously, if you're in a shop where everybody writes Python, learn Python, right? You don't want to go out and learn a language that's different than everybody else there. But if there's no clear standard, I think still for now, Perl really is the right one for sysadmins for today. You probably want to learn C. At a minimum, if you go read the POSIX standards for operating system interface and what your system ought to be able to do for you, all of that's described in terms of the C language interface. And so you need to be able to minimum to look at a definition that says, oh yeah, it's passing these things, it's getting these things back, here's how it's described, and understand what the section in the spec is talking about. If you ever wind up needing to read the kernel, most of the kernel is in C, you're going to need to understand it for that. Now, I am not proposing that you need to become a C programmer. If you do, it's probably a good thing. I think it'll help. But you need to at least be able to read it and understand it. And as a sort of bonus skill, if you want to learn assembler, that can also help because there are parts of the kernel that are in that. And if you ever work in an environment where your product does things with the kernel, people are having trouble booting it, you may find yourself reading the kernel source code, which is assembler. And trust me, it's not pretty, but it can help. But again, purely a bonus skill. You need to know a little bit about software engineering. And I'm talking about software engineering in a couple of different ways. At a minimum, you need to understand some sort of basic version control. And whether that's RCS, something as simple as RCS, or something as fancy as Perforce or Git or one of those. You probably want to keep your system configuration files in some sort of version control system. Whether you're using some sort of fancy system management program like Puppet or Chef, or whether you're doing it purely by hand, having some way to roll back of what was that last version, where is it, at a minimum, basic version control is a critical skill for sysadmins, not in the way we, you know, fancy software engineering. So you're not going to branch stuff, but you need to understand basic software engineering. You also need to understand software engineering for things like when you're writing those little utility scripts that you think will be around for a week and it'll be fine and 2 years later your colleagues are still using. It would be really nice if you didn't hard code the directory that it expects to run out of or hard code the username that you expect it to run from. Very simple configuration parameters. Don't rely on weird global variables that you can't find. Just real basic stuff so that when you or somebody else down the road need to fix it, you haven't shot yourself in the foot. You're not going, why did I do this? Why did I do this? I would suggest that for most people at most sites, you need to learn some sort of system configuration tool. The current big four are bconfig2, Chef, CFEngine, and Puppet. Will those be the big four next week? I don't know. Quator got a mention yesterday. I heard a lot of people going, ooh, I'm going to check that out. Maybe it'll go. There are similar tools for the Windows world. I forget what they're called, but they're actually starting to, I don't want to say catch up, but they're getting away from quite as much point and click as they used to be. It's worth understanding those. At a minimum, you need to understand what benefit they bring and be able to look at it and say, is it appropriate for our site to use one of these tools? How much is it going to cost me to do it? How much, and when I say cost, I'm talking about time, effort, actual money. And, you know, what do you do? What kinds of things do you put under it? What kinds of things don't you put under it? As a senior admin, you probably ought to have set one of those up from scratch, ideally in a real environment at an absolute minimum in your home system. But you ought to have done at least one from scratch because modifying somebody else's, you know, it's still tricky, but come into a new site, they don't have one of these things, what they've got is horrible, and you say, let's rip it out and start again, you really need to know what you're doing on at least one of those. I don't care which one. Pick one, pick something else, another one of the old ones, just have done it at least once. I will take questions at the end, so please don't interrupt now, but do save them for later. You need basic networking skills, TCP, IP, and UDP at a minimum. You need to know sort of the basic setup a connection, tear down a connection, how ARP works, real simple routing stuff, the difference between switches and routers, all the good stuff that a lot of, again, generalist sysadmins wind up dealing with because they don't have networking people to deal with it. It would probably help to have some reasonably in-depth knowledge of what I'm calling application protocols. So you need to understand HTTP. You need to understand FTP, IMAP, SSH, enough to be able to do some simple debugging, right? User comes in and says, I can't connect. And at a certain point on some of these situations, you may wind up looking at a network analyzer, looking at packets and going, oh, yeah, it's coming in, but the firewall is stopping it, or whatever it is. You need to understand the protocol at least enough of a level to be able to debug those kinds of problems. And even though it's not a networking problem per se, somebody's firewall is misconfigured, somebody's SE Linux is misconfigured, sometimes it really helps to be able to go to the wire, look at the bits that are actually going back and forth, because at that point it's really obvious of connection request goes in and never comes back. Well, that would explain the problem. It's probably over there that the problem is happening. You do need a reasonable understanding of routers, firewalls, load balancers, cachers, accelerators, all those good stuff. And you need to know how to use a protocol analyzer. And again, if you're lucky enough to have senior people or other network people doing this for you, great. If not, you ought to learn it. So the triple bonus skill is knowing the kernel. The kernel source code's out there. It's got a bunch of really interesting stuff. And every so often, you get into these weird situations, particularly performance tuning, where things just aren't working right. Being able to grovel down in the kernel and take a look at some things can help you figure it out. On the other hand, the field is moving away from having to get to that depth of stuff, but there will be times when, as I said, triple bonus skill, it'd be nice to understand the kernel. There are a couple really good books describing each of the different kernels. Pick one, read it. If nothing else, it's interesting to see how they work. I mentioned this very briefly before. This is a hard skill you're not going to like, and this applies to pretty much every person in every environment. Learn Windows. You need to learn the Windows desktop. You need to learn the common Windows applications, the common Office applications at a minimum, Outlook, PowerPoint, and Word, Outlook or Lotus Notes. You need to learn to be able to do basic config on Windows. Why? Because the vast majority of companies that you're going to go into, the vast majority of settings you're going to go into, somebody in the company is going to be using Windows systems, probably for mail. And one of the worst things as a senior admin that you can do, that you can say to your manager when the manager says, how come you didn't show up at the meeting or I can't schedule meetings with you, is for you to respond with, oh, I don't use Outlook, therefore I can't schedule meetings. If the company is using Outlook for scheduling, as a senior administrator, you need to use Outlook and you need to pay attention to the scheduling. Whether you like it or not, I hate the thing, but I happen to think its scheduling is pretty good. I don't send mail in it if I can avoid it, but I use it. And in fact, I found that if the company is using Outlook for email, I just shrug my shoulders and say, okay, I'm using Outlook for email too, because people are going to send you files that you're not going to be able to read, or it's going to be a pain. You need to be able to communicate with the rest of the people in the company, period, end of story. Learn Windows. It's actually gotten a lot better over the last however many years, so it's not as horrible as you think. Squishy technical skills. These are technical skills. We're still talking about machines. We're still talking about the techie stuff, the stuff we like to do, but we're not talking about any specific technology here. Some of these things do what I call facing out, planning, analysis, those kinds of things. There are some that face inward, career growth, and I'm going to cover some of both. The main outward-facing squishy skill is analysis, planning, and evaluation. You need to be able to look at the big picture of whatever we're doing. Boss says, all right, we're going to put up a new website, right? You know, and we're not talking like a couple of web pages on some server. We're talking about large web application. All of a sudden, you as the senior person in the group need to understand network requirements, power requirements to put all this stuff in, storage requirements, how many servers you need, load balancers, et cetera. How do you figure out what you need? How do you analyze what systems you've got, whether they can take the load and handle it? How do you make plans for what needs to be rolled out first, what things have to be in place before other things can be in place, what configuration deadlocks are there if this thing needs this bit of information before that thing gets that one. You also need to be able to evaluate the results of something. Somebody says, well, we've got this huge system, and it's just overall kind of slow. Where's the problem? Well, is it in the disk subsystem? Is it in the servers? Is it where? You need to be able to look at large-scale problems, understanding lots of bits and pieces and how they interact. You also need to understand rolling those things out. You're obviously not going to do it in one day. And particularly if you're doing upgrades, you need to understand, okay, we've got this stuff. We start here. We do this. At a certain point, if this doesn't work, we have to roll back. And if it doesn't work by this point, we've got to roll back versus once you're past there, maybe you have to go to a different point before you can roll back. Or once you cross that line, you can't roll back. There's no going back. You've got to go forward. How are you going to schedule it? How long is it going to take? How long is the scheduling going to take compared to what your company's needs are? So, for example, if you're running a commerce site of some sort, you're not going to schedule a major rollout of these things on the day after Thanksgiving, right? Having downtime on Black Friday is just a really bad idea. And you need to be able to figure out, okay, so if we start this on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, are we going to finish in time or whatever it is? You need to be able to pay attention to those kinds of schedulings as well as just the boss is going to say, how long is it going to take? You need to know. And again, this is as much for debugging as planning new stuff. It's the same skill, really, for both of them. Where am I going? You need to understand process. And process is the stuff that a lot of us like to hate. It's really nothing more than it's the rules for how things get done, what systems we go through. We could be talking about full-blown change management, right? Every single change to a system has to be approved by somebody. You have to have schedules. You have to have rollbacks. You have to have tests for whether you know it's correct or not correct. You have to have a peer working with you to do it. You have to get it all approved. Or it could be as simple as, hey, if you're going to make a change to the system, you need to send out an email 24 hours in advance. One of the things about process is figuring out how much process is appropriate. The main problem that people have with process is that it gets in the way of doing their job. That's not a fault of the process. That's a fault of there's too much or too little or the wrong kind. In general, process is a really good thing. And if you live in any kind of regulated environment where you the acronyms HIPAA or SOX or FERPA or PCI, any of those things apply to you, you better learn to love process because it's there. And again, the trick is finding the appropriate amount. If it's done well, process actually helps your job, right? You don't make dumb mistakes because the process prevents them. You don't do things when another group needs the machines because there's an announcement process where you say, "Out, we're going to do this upgrade, this and the other," unless somebody objects within the next 24 hours. And you get mail back saying, no, we've got this big run. Don't do that. And you don't kill their jobs. Process does not have to be automatic. It may be manual. It may be automatic. Sometimes it's as simple as knock up a quick web page. Sometimes it's as large as, you know, full scale, pick whatever tool it is. You need to learn to love it, and you need to learn to figure out what's appropriate. You can't just go to management and say, we can't get our jobs done. You need to go to management and say, we can't get our jobs done because, and here's what I recommend instead. Simply saying, get rid of the process is not going to fly coming from a senior admin. Management's looking to you to say, well, what's an appropriate replacement process? Process also, and I'll talk about this more in a few minutes, process also starts to get towards dealing with business requirements, right? A lot of the process, some of the process requirements are imposed from outside by things like PCI, which is a basically security security regulations for people that do credit card processing. Some of it is process of, you know, here's what it just takes to keep our business up and running and so we don't lose money. You need to be familiar with the prevalent standard, prevailing standards for whatever you're dealing with. So for the operating system, it's most people refer to it as POSIX. You may have also heard it as the Open Group Base Spec, IEEE Standard 1003, Single Unix Spec, Spec 1170. It's what covers the API and the commands for the operating system we mostly use and love, or mostly use and sometimes love. It's grossly incomplete for sysadmin stuff, but it does specify most of the other things. It's worth knowing about. Not every vendor sticks to it. Some vendors violate it in ways that aren't documented, but it's worth knowing about, again, because if there's a discussion with a vendor or a disagreement or something, or if you're writing specs for your bit of software needs to comply to POSIX so we know that we can pick it up and move it from machine A to machine B, that's your reference. I wish it were more complete on sysadmin stuff, but the project fell down there and never got there. The other kinds of standards are really regulations, and I mentioned some of them. SOX is publicly traded companies, and it's not really about sysadmins, but sysadmins get affected by it. HIPAA for people dealing with any kind of medical data, FERPA for student information in universities, again, PCI for credit card processing. At a minimum, you need to know they exist. The next step up is being able to work with the people who are experts in those to figure out how to appropriately implement them in your company. The one thing that's not going to work from a senior sysadmin is saying, oh, we don't want to do that. Right? If your company is required to follow PCI regulations or SOX or whatever it is, that's it. You follow it. Yes, some of it is, well, you know the word I want to put in there. We're stuck with it. But the reality is, if you're the senior admin, your job is to make it so the company can meet those regulations and requirements and do so in the way that still lets you get your business done and gets the stuff done in a way that doesn't drive everybody crazy. Again, you cannot go to management and say, ooh, I hate that stuff. We're not going to do it. That doesn't fly. And again, as the senior person, you're going to be who's expected to interface with the auditors, with the consultants, et cetera, to figure out, it says something fairly vague and squishy. This is how we actually apply it here. Here's how it affects Windows systems, Linux, whatever it is. You're the person in the hot seat, so at least knowing what they are and being able to talk to those people. You're not expected to be an expert in them. That's a whole different career. One of the other things you need to do is you need to talk about business. This is one of these things that I see way too many sysadmins just not understanding. For the vast majority of, some really small number of sysadmins work in a place where the business of the company is providing system administration services. Not many of us anymore. The vast majority of people work somewhere where sysadmin is about supporting the rest of the business, right? There are machines out there that we can do really cool stuff with, but the reason those machines exist is to either produce the company's product or help the people who work for the company produce the product or support something else. They're there for other people to use, not for us to get to do cool stuff with. Everything that you do as a sysadmin needs to have a business reason behind it. Now, I don't mean that you have to be able to tie every individual bit to, oh, this gets that particular product out the door, but the reason that you do everything is there's a business reason behind it. You've got an SLA. What is it? Well, that's the SLA you need to meet. And how much, somebody asked one time, how often should I monitor email? Well, what's your SLA say? If the SLA is, we'll detect problems in email within 30 minutes, then monitoring it anything less than 30 minutes just doesn't make sense, right? You're spending too much time monitoring a system every 5 minutes that you don't care if you find out the problem. You know, you've got half an hour to find the problem. Why waste the effort to be able to monitor really fast when the SLA is something different? On the other hand, if the SLA is, we'll detect mail problems in 5 minutes, and you say, oh, we got this lazy system, we'll know within a half an hour, wrong, you lose. Backups. How much backup do you need? Do you need offsite? Do you need rotating weekly? Do you need rotating monthly? Again, how much risk is the business willing to put up with? If the business says, you know, we could lose a month's worth of data, we can regenerate if we had to, then spending any more money on backup that you need to meet a requirement more stringent than that doesn't make sense, right? Yeah, it might be cool to have cool rolling backups and offsites and daily stuff and huge pipes and all that. It's not worth spending the money on if the company says, I can lose a month's of data. Doesn't matter to me. Conforming to regulations, all those things, again, business-driven stuff that says, here's what the business requires, how much and what kind of sysadmin is required to meet that, and no more. We'd like to do cool stuff. And if it makes sense, you do the cool stuff. But if you suggest to your boss that we're going to roll out Puppet and it's going to take us 3 weeks to do it and all four sysadmins and we're going to get this and here's what we're going to get. We're going to get a 99% uptime and we can provision machines in 5 minutes and anybody can do it. And the management says, well, you know, guys, if it takes a day for the system to come up and we only provision systems about once every 6 months, it doesn't make sense to spend all that time doing it, right? There's got to be a correlation between what you do and what the business requires and no more. This is one of the acronyms that comes out of the agile world. You ain't going to need it. When somebody comes to you and says, we need to do the following, yeah, ask questions, find out what's there, find out what the requirements are, and then implement those requirements. And until there's a requirement for something beyond that, don't do it. Don't do it partly because you may find out 6 months down the road that you need it, but the requirements have changed slightly, so you put in the effort then. Or 2 years later, you discover, we really didn't need it. Why did I bother putting it in? So if there's not a requirement for something, don't do it. Don't do it because it's cool. Don't do it because it makes your job easier. If there's not a requirement for it, don't do the thing. Now, to be fair, if you can convince your boss that there is a business case for making your job easier, we have fewer system crashes because I can guarantee the systems are set up correctly if I use Puppet. Or if we set up a system wrong and we roll it out and with crashes, it costs us this much money versus it would cost us a tenth of that to use Puppet or Chef. I don't have any love for any of them. I don't care. Then you can make a business case for there ought to be a requirement. But until the requirement exists, we can't do it just because it's cool. Now, the question that came to my mind immediately when I was writing that slide was, yeah, but what about future growth? What about economy of scale? What about those things? Those should already be part of your business plan. If somebody gives you a set of requirements for a web system that needs to serve this number of pages, et cetera, and that number is, here's what we had last week, and there's no projection of future growth, you really ought to take that spec back to them and say, you know, if we're a successful company, we're going to grow. We probably should allow some amount of growth. How much? How much do you want to spend? How much do we think we're going to grow? Yeah, put that into the requirements. But then again, once it's in the requirements, don't go beyond that. And a particular reason for that is, let's say that you've got a system that's composed of three different parts, web server, you know, database, and whatever else the other things are. Right? You might discover 6 months down the road that what you need are 50 more web servers. Or you might discover that the three web servers you have are fine, but that rinky-dink little database box isn't nearly enough. If you optimize now, you don't know which one you're betting on. You've got a 1-in-3 chance of getting it right. If you wait until you actually need it, then you spent the money in the right place. And again, you plan for some reasonable amount of growth, call that the spec, and build to that. And then when it needs to change, you change down the road. A couple of years ago, in the past however many years, I think we've had a workshop called Business-Driven IT Management. I would argue that there's no other kind of IT management. Everything we do as sysadmins, everything that happens in IT, is driven by a business requirement. And part of your job as a sysadmin is figuring out what the requirements are or helping the company figure out what their requirements ought to be and then meeting those requirements, spending no more money than it takes to meet them because anything else, you know, if you need it or not. if somebody comes to you, if your boss, if you make a presentation to your boss about doing something, we've got this cool backup system. We want to roll this out. We ought to do it. It'll be this, cost us this much. And your boss says, so why do we need that for the business? How much is it going to save us? Or how much is it going to cost us if we don't roll this out and we have a data loss or something? If you can't answer the question of tying this particular operation to this particular business need or requirement, your boss isn't going to be able to do it. The people above your boss who have to sign the purchase rec certainly aren't going to be able to do it. And beyond that, they're not even going to know what it is. So if you can't see the connection between a particular operation and a particular business need, nobody else above you is going to be able to see it. And you need to learn about how to do business, how the business works. I'm not saying you need to go get an MBA, but you need to understand the idea of we do things to make money, or we do things to provide the following services, or whatever it is, so that you can look at it and say, here's an appropriate technology to meet our requirements, our business requirements. Another skill that you need to deal with is budgeting. Again, real important part of the business side of sysadmin. Your boss is probably going to do, assuming you're not the manager of the group, your boss is probably going to do most of the work for that, but your boss is going to come to you for data. How much is it going to cost us to buy a web server that can handle 10,000 pages a second? Or we're going to expand to another 2 petabytes of disk. How much is that going to cost? You need to be able to do deal with vendors to get reasonable quotes. You need to be able to figure out how much stuff is needed. And you need to be able to look at all the kinds of stuff that go into a budget, not necessarily making a budget, but the data from which that budget is built. That's going to be up to you. And again, business side of sysadmin. Those are mostly sort of, as I said, outward-facing, squishy skills. Those are things that you know, are about you helping the company, about you doing things for the company. There are also a couple others that aren't really, they're not soft skills yet, but they do face inwards. It's more sort of career growth. One of the things I think that's sort of similar to budgeting in that it's about you and your manager and stuff that like sits on that border. As a senior sysadmin, there's a really good chance that you're going to know more about sysadmin than your manager. I've heard lots of sysadmins go, my stupid manager doesn't know anything about this, blah, blah, blah. Your manager's job is not to run the machines. Your manager's job is to manage the sysadmin group. Now, yes, it would help if your manager had some background in it, but management is about managing people, not about the machines. And at a certain point, you're not going to be able to go to your boss for help. That's okay. Probably even a good thing. But a lot of sysadmins seem to have problems accepting this. Now, the gotcha is it means that when you do need help, you have to find somebody else to turn to. You need to find outside resources, more senior sysadmins who work somewhere else, other people that you can go to for help for technical skills. If you need help with soft skills, if you need help with budgeting kinds of things, those your manager can help with. But when it comes to, you know, hey, I don't know how to evaluate this backup system. We're having this backup problem or something. What do? Your boss isn't going to be able to help you. And again, that's okay. You may work for a manager that's never been a sysadmin. And in a lot of cases, that may be okay. Partly because sysadmins make really lousy managers on the whole. How many people here consider themselves people, right? You know, it's like, I've got really great soft skills. Okay, I think I saw 2 hands, right? In general, sysadmins are not big on people skills, so they're not who companies put in management positions. So your manager is not going to be technical, and again, it's okay, it's not their job. But again, too many sysadmins I've seen don't seem to want to accept that. Where was I? So where do you find these people to help? This is one place I actually can give you answers. Well, look around the room. Chances are good that there are people here who know a lot more than you do, or maybe they have as much experience as you do, but they know more about backup and you know more about networking. Get people's business cards, use the list here, or at whatever conference you go to. There are mailing lists and IRC channels through LOPSA and SAGE and on USENIX and all that stuff. There are local sysadmin groups. There are various sysadmin tags on Twitter and on Facebook. Make use of your colleagues even though you don't actually work with them. Come to conferences. The single biggest benefit to coming to conferences is meeting your colleagues from other companies so that at some point down the road, you can send mail to one of these guys and say, hey, we met at WISA back in November last year, and I remember you were talking about this cool tool, and I think I probably need it, but I can't remember what it is. Can you help? Or, yeah, you described this really cool puppet installation, and I've got this puppet problem. Can you help me get it going? The personal contacts that you make at conferences are really valuable, and I think they're valuable enough that coming to conferences on a fairly regular basis, even if you have to pay for it yourself, even if you have to take vacation time to do it, are worth it. The other reason for coming to conferences is you need to stay abreast of the literature for whatever your bit of the field is. If for nothing else, then you know what's coming down the road. Java was presented at a Unix conference and as a research project, and it's sort of, oh, we've got this cool system, you know, maybe something. And lo and behold, not too long after that, it's everywhere. And people go, where'd this come from? But the people who went to the conference go, oh, yeah, I heard about that. We know something about it. I know who to call for help. You probably also want to read up on stuff that's sort of around your field. So, for example, if you're primarily a sysadmin, knowing something about databases and database programming is probably a good idea. You may not have to deal with databases, but there's a good chance that somebody else in your company does, and you're going to have to talk to them. It would be really helpful to understand some of their terminology, because I talk to database guys, and it takes us 10 minutes to sort out what we mean when we're talking about disk storage, because they have completely different meanings for volumes and data sets and this and that than we do, or it depends whether they're coming from an Oracle or an Informix world or something. They all have different words for it. And just being able to decode what they say would be, you know, half the problem. So it's worth learning about the skills that are sort of around us. It's worth learning something about what's going on in the programming world, because chances are good. For example, Ruby, it's not that old a language compared to, say, Perl and Python, and all of a sudden lots of people are using it and using Rails and things like that. It would be nice if you had heard of them so that when somebody, your developer, comes to you and says, so we want to develop this application on Rails and it needs all this stuff, that you're not going, who, what does it do again? You've at least heard of it. You might want to keep up on sort of where user interface and sysadmin is going. We love command lines, right? They're great. It's not where the world's going for, and it's going to change. There happens to be this cool little conference called KIMET downstairs tomorrow. And if you're not here, you could find out about it at the same conference. Yeah. You also need to learn, you need to start collecting books. At a certain point, you want your own library. You're going to move jobs. You don't want to, every time you change jobs, go ask your boss, hey, I need to buy these 13 books or 47 or whatever it is. You ought to have your own reference library. Now, yeah, some of the stuff is online. Some of it still is in books, and it's worth having so that you can look at it when the machine's dead. I'm not going to give you a list of what should be on your bookshelf, but it includes things like, if you're interested in learning about the OS, you probably ought to have an OS design reference text. You ought to have some language reference for whatever it is you use. If you're a Python programmer, get some decent Python books that day when you're sitting there going, how do we do this again? You got a book to look at. And again, you want to own these. As a senior admin, you ought to be able to walk into the place, start working, and part of that includes you drop your books on your bookshelf and go. You don't wait 3 weeks for your boss to order new sets for you. Networking references, sysadmin references, it's not a big list. It's worth having. I'd throw a dictionary in there. But, you know, buy your own books. Another sort of squishy skill, which is, it's a hard one, I think, for some sysadmins to learn, is figure out when to ask for help. If you've got a problem and it takes you a couple hours to solve it and things, you know, nothing's falling apart around your head, yeah, okay, no big deal. On the other hand, if you're facing a problem and it's taking you 2 weeks to solve and you don't seem to be making any progress on it, maybe you should have asked for help a week ago. You need to learn when to ask for help, and you, as I said before, you need to know who to go to ask. But you're not going to figure out everything for yourself, no matter how senior you are. And at a certain point, obviously, you get to the point where there simply aren't people you can ask. Yeah, then you're stuck with the 2 weeks. But you need to get used to saying, okay, this problem's taking too long to solve. I should get help. And it's not something a lot of sysadmins like to do, but you ought to get used to it. Particularly programming help. if you've got some stupid little system that you and a couple of your sysadmin buddies use to make your life a little easier, you know, you can probably do it by yourself. On the other hand, if the boss comes and says, we need something that all the users can use to, I don't know, reset their password or whatever it is, you might want to go to the developers and say, guys, we need something that actually works and when it dies gives meaningful error messages. Some sysadmins can do that, but a lot of them can't, and that's probably way more of a programming skill than is required for sysadmin. When somebody comes to you with a request like that, you either say, you should go ask the developers for it, or you turn around and go to the developers and say, hey, I've got this project. You know, what's it going to take? Get it into their schedule and have somebody else do it for you. There are some things that should be written by people who that's their only job. There's also another sysadmin thing that's worth asking for help. If you're working in one of those environments where you type the wrong command and you cost the company thousands of dollars per minute because you just took down the wrong web server, it's worth having somebody else looking over your shoulder. This is, you know, the extreme programming thing, the pair programming. It doesn't have to be somebody as senior as you. It could even be a junior person. Have them look at the command line and make sure you're not about to do something stupid, right? It's the space between the slash and the star, or the dot and the star when you're trying to remove stuff. Or it's a junior person, you explain what you're trying to do, and when that person says, yeah, that sounds right, then you hit return. It's worth getting in the habit of getting some help before you're about to do something major. The reason that this is a senior skill is when you're junior, in general, they don't let you do things that have the ability to take out the whole company for a couple of days. When you're senior, you're that person. And if anyone in the company has the possibility of wiping out your entire site, it's you. And it's worth learning to recognize those situations and say, maybe I'll get somebody just to give me a quick sanity check, just to make sure I don't screw up. Now, if you're a person in a one-man sysadmin shop, you're kind of out of luck on that one. All right, so this is the stuff you don't like. Okay? You don't want to hear it. I promise you're going to be right. It's the stuff that most sysadmins need to hear most. It's the place where most sysadmins have the worst skills. It's the stuff that's the hardest for most sysadmins to learn. And this is going to be the entire rest of what I talk about. The reason you need to know these things is because system administration is about people and about business, not about technology. Yes, we are operating on machines, but we are operating on those machines so that business can proceed and so that people can get their jobs done. And it's about dealing with those people. It's about helping those people and about helping the business. If you got into sysadmin because you wanted a field where you didn't have to deal with people, that may be okay for junior sysadmins, but as a senior person, you're going to be dealing with a lot of other people who don't know much about computers and who don't want to know much about computers, but it's your job to support them by making the machines work, but you have to deal with people. So, first bit of attitude. You really want to be friendly and helpful to your users. If you've got a reputation, or the sysadmin group as a whole has a reputation for, oh God, we hate going to talk to those guys, they're nasty, they don't like us, et cetera, and somebody has a problem, their system dies, and they sit there and let it wait because they don't want to come talk to the sysadmins, you have failed. Right? If somebody can't get their job done because of something that you could fix, but they don't want to come to ask you to fix it, you have failed in a big way. You've cost the company money because somebody else isn't getting their job done. On the other hand, if your users like you, if people want to see you, if people know that they can come to your office or send you mail or call you or whatever it is, and that you'll get it fixed, or you'll at least say, yeah, we're busy with this, we'll get to you as soon as we can, and you go and you help them and you get it fixed, you're going to have happy customers and you're going to have a company that runs. But if people don't want to talk to you, again, you're not doing your job. And being snarly and surly and pedantic and all those other things that sysadmins seem to like to be is not how to get people to like you. Now, yes, there are security requirements. There are business regulations like PCI and HIPAA and whatever it is. Your job is to help the user figure out how to do their job within those regulations and requirements. Your job is not to just say, nope, you can't do that, and walk away. Right? If somebody says, we have this need, you can't just say, well, that violates the security protocols, can't do it. Your job is to say, well, that conflicts with our security protocols, let's figure out how to get you what you need, or let's figure out how to get an exception to the security protocols so that you can do your job. Right? Your job is to help that person get to a point where they can do their job, not just say, no, you can't do that, and walk away. Right? It doesn't work. That's not what senior sysadmins are there for. You need to learn how to talk to management. We're used to talking to our peers. We're used to talking to people who are willing to argue with us about stuff. We're used to people who understand the acronyms that we use, who understand the technology, who we can just rattle off long streams of bits and bytes and this and that, and the people listening to us aren't snowed by it. It's like, oh, yeah, great, makes sense. Managers don't know that stuff. Managers don't need to know that stuff. When you're talking, when management asks you a question, you need to be able to answer your managers with an appropriate level of detail, with a business case for your answer, and with solid reasoning, not just, oh, that's a really bad idea, right? Management are responsible for answering to the rest of the business, for keeping the business running, and when they come to you with a question, talking to them like you're a techie, if they're not, again, you're not helping the people that you're trying to support. And yes, you're supporting your manager, even if it's not with a computer problem. You need to respect the other people in the company. And this is one that just drives me absolutely batty when I see this on particularly IRC. There are a lot of people in your company. And the bell curve says that some of them are smarter than you are and some of them are less smart. But for the most part, everybody's reasonably smart, right? They don't know much about computers. We know a lot about computers, okay? It's not their job to know about computers what we know about computers. They may be nuclear physicists, or they may be accountants, or they may be machinists, or whatever it is. They've got a job, and the assumption is that if the company's keeping on payroll, they're probably pretty good at that job. We're really good at our job. And the fact that they don't know our job does not make them any less worthy of anything than we are, right? It's about respect. They're not stupid. They just don't know computers. And the two have nothing to do with each other. Now, yeah, there are a few stupid people in the world. But in general, the people you're working with are not stupid. They just don't know about computers. On the other hand, how many of you people could walk into a nuclear reactor and know how to run the thing? Anybody? Yeah. Thank you, Amy. Right? They don't think we're stupid. Well, I hope they don't think we're stupid. But again, it's different areas of specialization. And I had this really great example a couple weeks ago. It's like, I'm starting to write this talk, and I couldn't have asked for a better example. I use an IBM ThinkPad. My wife uses a Mac iBook. And they're different in ways that I never really pay much attention to. But they've got a different latch. They've got a different on-off switch. They've got different mice. They've got different buttons, all that stuff. I don't think of it. I don't think of it because the iBook she's using used to be mine. We're sitting around. I'm in the shower. We're on vacation. She wants to use my computer. She comes in and says, can I use the computer? Yeah, sure, no problem. Comes back about 10 seconds later. How do I open it? Right? So I describe where the latch is. Comes back later. Which button turns it on? Okay, tell her that one. Which button clicks the mouse? Right? I got three buttons. She's got one. Now, I know sysadmins who, upon hearing that, would go, boy, is she dumb. My wife has a master's degree in biomedical engineering and has at least one patent. And after she was done with that, my wife went back to medical school and is now a doctor. Most of the time, I feel like she's smarter than I am. She just doesn't know about computers. And here's the thing that most people don't understand. In the course of her career, she has probably used computers for an average, something around 7,500 hours. I have used computers in my career for 120,000 hours. That's a factor of 16, right? I use computers 8 hours a day, every day of the week. She uses them for an hour or two a day, right? I eat, sleep, and breathe this stuff and don't think anything of walking up to a brand new computer, looking at it and going, oh yeah, there's the power switch, there's the latch, here's how the buttons work, I know what operating system it's running, poof, I'm off and going. My wife doesn't do that, right? My wife is not dumb, she just knows 1/16th of what I know about computers. And that's probably true for you and your users. They're not dumb, but they don't know computers because it's not their job to know about computers. If it were their job, the company wouldn't hire you, right? If everybody else could do sysadmin, you'd be out of a job, right? People forget about this, and they make jokes like this. Now, to be fair, Iliad gave me permission to use this, and I don't want to say, no, you shouldn't have done that, right? It's a fun joke inside our crowd, but it's a demonstration of stuff that we don't want to do. There are telco executives who, yeah, some of them are a little, I wish they weren't there. On the other hand, they're running $40 billion a year businesses and seeming to do it somewhat successfully. There are consultants. I'm a consultant, right? I'm supporting myself quite comfortably doing consulting. And there are web designers who have designed some really good websites, like, you know, Google. But if you think about it, right, you know, it's there. It's fun. It's really not the right thing. It's not the right thing to take that kind of thing seriously, right? If it's strictly between you and a couple sysadmins over a beer, yeah. On the other hand, here's the deal. If you think about your coworkers in terms of, I respect them, they respect me, we don't say bad things about each other, it colors how you deal with those people, right? What you think internally, what you say to yourself, what you say to your friends about your coworkers really does have an effect on how you actually deal with your coworkers. And the easy way is to just not make jokes like that, right? Yeah, you read it, it's funny, sort of fine. If you don't make the jokes, you tend not to think that way. And again, it just helps, even if you think you're being respectful, those kinds of things make the other people in our companies often think that we don't respect them. And that's really the important part, right? What their perception of us is, not necessarily what our perception of them is. But again, if internally our perception of them is, yeah, they're smart, they just need some help with computers, that's going to help you dealing with those people. And again, I spend so much time on this because I see so many sysadmins who the immediate assumption is this person doesn't know about computers, therefore they are dumb. It's not the case. And it's really not a good thing for coming out of the mouths of senior sysadmins. Another one, and again, I see this on the thing. Boy, did those developers do a crappy job of putting this software together. Rather than complain about it, walk down the hall, go to the developers, describe the problem, and help them fix it, right? Just saying, they don't know how to do anything, it's bad software, doesn't get the problem solved. And if all you do is complain about them, they're not likely to be interested in helping you solve the problem, in which case you're stuck with software that doesn't do what it needs to do, and the company's losing money, and again, you lose, right? Help people, don't just complain about stuff. Now, it's reasonable to say, I hate it when the software doesn't work, right? That's a problem, right? You've got a job to do. The software doesn't help you. You're frustrated, sure. But just saying stupid developers doesn't get you any closer to getting your job done. The biggest thing with developers is many of them are not familiar with operations requirements, but more importantly, most of them never see the operations requirements as part of their spec. Right? You're a software, you're given a spec to build a system, just like as a sysadmin, you're given a spec to build a website. If the operations requirements aren't in their spec, they can't be reasonably expected to put them in there any more than if a triply redundant RAID whatever system isn't in our spec, that we would be expected to build the machine using that. Right? If it just says 2 terabytes of disk, then you're going to go with the cheapest 2 terabytes of disk you can get. On the other hand, if it says 2 terabytes of disk with these protection requirements and these backups and these reliabilities, then you're going to go build something much bigger. again, if the developers don't get a spec that gets operations requirements in it, it's not their fault for not putting them in. And so you actually need to work a level above the developers, which is go to the people who are designing the software system and say, hey, guys, in addition to all the stuff this needs to do, we need to be able to install the software. We need to be able to control the software. Can we modify the spec so that it includes these other features or these other ways of doing things? And again, if it's not in their spec and they've never heard of it, it's not their fault if they didn't put it in. And if you didn't tell them about it, how are they going to know? Well, you could argue that, yeah, the developers should know this. Well, the developers could argue that you should know enough about the code to be able to put it in yourself. Doesn't work, right? Go help them. Don't just complain about stuff. There's another skill that I don't have a good word for it. Public speaking isn't really the right answer. Public speaking is what I'm doing here. What I'm talking about is the ability to get up in front of your group or maybe other groups in the company, maybe a couple of managers or maybe even the first and second level managers or even the execs, but typically small groups, not a formal setting like this, but making presentations. So you've got the, all your sysadmins, you say, hey guys, we're going to roll out Puppet. And you're the only person on the team that's done it before, and so you want to give an intro to how to use Puppet or whatever. Or you get better yet, you get back from Lisa. They say, hey, why don't we all get together at lunch and I'll tell you what I learned at Lisa this year. I'm talking about those kinds of skills, and again, public speaking for lack of a better word. You need to be able to do that. As a sysadmin, you're going to get called on to explain the new mail system to the rest of the company. You're going to get called on to meet with managers to discuss what we should be going to now that Sun Hardware is under a different name and maybe we do or don't want to use that anymore, or the support costs have gotten a lot higher and so maybe we want to switch operating systems. You're going to wind up making presentations. It's worth learning how to do that. I'm not talking about this kind of presentation. On the other hand, if you want to get to a conference and your name's on the program, your manager's a lot more likely to send you. But the kind of public speaking skills I'm talking about, again, are small groups inside your company, not formal presentations, but you've got to be able to do it. Had a senior sysadmin job not too long ago, and about the third day I was meeting with my manager's manager, and we were talking about a new project, and he said, yeah, that sounds really good. Do you think on Friday you could make a presentation to the CIO about it? And I know a lot of sysadmins who would have absolutely freaked at that. They would just go, ah! And I'm like, Yeah, do I have to dress up for it? It's worth learning how to make those kinds of presentations because you are going to have to do it. And if you can't do it, you're useless to your manager for that sort of stuff. He or she winds up doing it. Again, it's a skill that as a senior admin, you really do need to have. That's almost it. I've got a few answers for a few of these things. I said at the beginning I didn't have any. For the soft skills, this is actually one of the places where it's easier to find a mentor because assuming you get along well with your manager or assuming that there's a manager in your company who you get along with well, they can probably help you with a lot of these soft skills. It's what managers in theory do. Managers work with people, not machines. Talk to them. Tell them you want to learn these things. Sit down with them and say, look, tell me the places I don't do a good job. Tell me where I'm lousy at this stuff. Tell me what I need to think about. And then talk to them for, once a week or once a month or whatever. Say, am I making any progress? How would I fix this one? Does it look like I'm getting better about that one? A lot of times, as I said with the questions here, just knowing what the issues are is often enough to solve the problem. So if what your manager says to you is you're confrontational when talking to people about stuff and that doesn't work, that alone may be enough for you to go, oh, yeah, I could probably rephrase how I talk to other people, or not. It may be that you really need to work on that one, and your manager needs to, or that your mentor manager needs to say that to you over and over and over again. But you can find a manager to help you with that, and chances are good your company has a few managers in it. Your company may or may not have another sysadmin to help you with stuff, so soft skills mentors are easier. The LOPSA mentorship program may have some managers that can help you with it, or people, sysadmins who do have some soft skills that are good at it. But again, this is one of those cases where having somebody you work with is probably easier because you're going to be interacting with them, you're going to be in the same room with them, and they're going to actually see you rather than have to have you describe what you're doing and how you do things. They can actually look at it and go, remember this afternoon when you said that to the guy? Let me give you a tip about it. And again, the person doesn't have to be the least bit technical. They just have to be good with soft skills. Unfortunately, that's about the only answer I can really give you. All the rest of the stuff, let me rephrase that. That's the only answer that I can give you in the time we've got here. And I'm not saying I can answer all of the other questions, but you know, it takes a while to figure these out. There are answers out there, but again, hopefully what I've given you is a long list of questions and things to look at and go, oh yeah, I probably ought to go learn how to do that. That's it. Well, almost it. There are a couple of people, let me use their pictures and things, and there's a cute dog that's got a webpage if you care more about them. As I said, the copy of my speaking notes will be available on the website, on my website. If you have questions, feel free to send me mail. Catch me at the conference. Thanks for listening. Who's got questions? Wow. That's it. Okay. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's like, okay.
John Crota from UC Berkeley. We're in the university environment. We have our share of what Dilbert likes to call pointy ear sociopaths.
Yep.
Speaking as an occasional follower of Machiavelli, it's great to work on this stuff if no other reason than compared to your fellow pointy ear sociopaths, you look better.
Yeah.
The other part is that looking at conflict resolution is really useful if for no other reason than if the reason you're confrontational is because your manager rewards it unknowingly by the fact that you get more results than when you're being nice and polite. Then that can help point out larger problems within your organization.
Interesting. Thank you. Up front.
Jay Grizzard, I'm an engineer with Yahoo. I have more of a comment than a question directly.
Okay.
I've had the privilege to work with a number of up-and-coming Unix sysadmins over the years. And I more or less wanted to reemphasize that one of the things that I've seen holding more of them back than anything else is an inability to ask for help or an inability to acknowledge that there's something you don't know. People get this idea in their head where they feel like they're a failure if they don't know how every single thing they need to deal with works. And I've watched it hold some people back terribly because they haven't been willing to use the resources that are available to them.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, having a network to reach out to is really important. I just can't emphasize how important that
having,
seems
to having be. Having the network is one thing. Knowing to ask for it is the harder thing for most people, right? Building the network is easy. Oh, you go to the conference, you meet all these people. Remembering to ask for it's the hard part. Vivek?
Ron Echeverry with Netflix. A question is about the knowing what you need to learn to take the path is one thing, but how about when? How can you take out the opportunity to learn what you want to learn? I mean, it sometimes we're all busy. We're all really busy at work. How do you find the time? How do you make the time to broaden your knowledge?
So remember what I said about paying out of your own pocket to come to Lisa. That's sort of the same thing. If you're treating sysadmin as a career, one of the things about careers in general is that your company is going to pay you for a certain amount of career advancement because it's in their best interest to do so, but you also need to, in effect, pay for some of your own. So you go to conferences or workshops on your own dime. You spend time studying in the evenings. For example, I know some sysadmins who have joined Toastmasters. And once a week or once a month or whatever it is, they spend an evening learning better public speaking skills. They're investing their own time in it. Some of it's going to be on the job, but some of it has to be on your time as well. And if it's important to you, you make time for it. But again, it can't all happen on the job. But it's unreasonable for there to be none on the job. But you can't ask your employer to do it all. So you need to set aside some time for some of it yourself.
Hi, I'm Jason Parker with Google. What are some good strategies for team building?
For what?
For team building.
Ask Tom Limoncelli. No, seriously, it is an important thing. It's Tom knows way more about this than I do, and it's not that I don't acknowledge it's there. It's just I don't have a lot of good solutions for it, mostly because the teams I've worked on seem to be pretty good to start with, and they're careful about adding people to it. I've never had to do the, well, we've got this really dysfunctional team. How do we make it better? But I believe that Tom has. And if not, there are lots of people out there that know how to do it. Sorry. Back.
I'm Robin Landers from the University of Waterloo. I guess my question is fairly similar to that one. I was going to ask you about your perception of potential value of things like, you know, Myers-Briggs personality categorization exercises, which is sort of related to team building, and whether you've had any experience in any of those being any better or worse than others, or if the main thing is just convincing people to get over their skepticism and actually go with it and get something out of it.
So I'll admit a personal bias against Myers-Briggs, because I'm one of those people that Myers-Briggs doesn't work well on. On some of the scales, I have some really strong preferences, and in other cases, it's not that I have no preferences, it's that I bounce from one end of the scale to the other in situational stuff. And so I look at it and go, you know, does this really matter? I think in most of these cases, it's really more about if there's a tool that helps you figure out stuff about yourself, great, use it. But as I said, I think a lot of it is recognizing that here are these skills I ought to have, or here are these, I don't want to say personality defects, but for lack of a better word, that, you know, these are things I'm not good at that I ought to be better about. Just recognizing that they're there may be enough. And then, if not, figure out how to get there. If I don't think there's any one of them that's especially good. I don't think any of them are necessarily bad. I certainly haven't seen one that seems to do a really good job in lots of places. And I'm not convinced that they're worth spending the time or money on, but I think it's worth spending the time or money to somehow figure out what those kinds of personality differences are, how they affect things, how they affect you. But I guess I see most of it more as a sort of introspection type thing. And if a tool like Myers-Briggs helps you do that, great. But saying the group should do this and have the discussion about it, I'm not convinced.
We did do that in our department, and I wouldn't say it's had huge benefits, but there certainly were a few surprises where people looked across the table at somebody they'd been working with for years and went, really? That's what you're really like? And you cover that up so well? Or, oh, now I understand that when you present in a certain way with this kind of attitude, I get where that's coming from. And it maybe has softened off the edges a little bit and made people a little more tolerant and understanding of each other.
I've seen it work in some places, and I've seen it not work in others. So, again, it's sort of a neutral, if it helps, great, but I don't have a specific strong recommendation. Anyone else? All right, let's take our break early. Thanks for coming.